This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasuthi. Obsessive compulsive disorder is a term that many of us are familiar with on a passing level, but one that few understand the consequences that sufferers contend with. Here to shed more light on the disorder are consultant psychiatrists Dr. Philip George and Dr. Stephen Jambunathan. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. How are you today?
Hi, good. How are you?
And I'm very well, thank you. We are opening up the phone line, so if you have a question on OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, give us a call. The number is 03-7710-9000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 016-201-9000. What are the characteristics of people with obsessive compulsive disorder, Dr. Philip?
Yeah, well, obsessive compulsive disorder is one of the five anxiety disorders. And so the typical most important symptom is anxiety. And anxiety, of course, you have psychological and physical symptoms. And the anxiety in obsessive compulsive disorder arises from the compulsions that keep coming and the need to want to to satisfy those compulsions or obsessions. So obsessions basically are irrational thoughts that are repetitive. So the person knows they're insensible, they're really ridiculous thoughts, but they keep coming back and the person has to sort of, give in to those thoughts. And then compulsions are irresistible urges to do things. And again, the person knows that they're insensible. But the moment that they try and resist, they develop the anxiety.
Is there an underlying cause most of the time, Stephen?
I would think that for OCD, it's all, again, the biopsychosocial cause. Mm-hmm. There might be a genetic predisposition. Also, the way you deal with stress and sometimes learned behavior, what we observe from a family member or sibling or someone very close to us, if they have this tendency to worry about something excessively, it becomes a habit. And subsequently, you learn it, you pick it up too. Yeah.
Why is it so difficult to break the cycle?
It's known as a vicious cycle because you have anxiety and you do something senseless, a compulsion to get the relief, and you do get a relief, but then the anxiety comes back and you have to do it again, and it comes back and you do it again. So it's just like digging yourself into a hole deeper and deeper.
Mm-hmm. And how do you diagnose?
Well, usually it's with the symptoms. So with all psychiatric disorders, we have a classification that helps us to come to a diagnosis. There's no, sort of test or x-ray or CT scan that can help diagnose OCD. It have to be a set of number of symptoms for a set period of time, and usually that's about 6 months. And of course, it has to be affecting the person in their social and occupational functioning as well.
Is that how we set it apart? Because we use the word OCD so loosely,
yes,
use the word depression very, very loosely. But what's the distinction between somebody who has a serious issue with OCD. Mm. What is the difference?
Maybe if I can give you an example, if I can give you two examples to maybe highlight the difference. One is a person who I had as a patient who, when the KL Tower was being built, had to go up this huge crane. But he had this continuous doubt, this compulsion to check his car and see whether it was locked. Now, he had to climb up this crane to start work, and within 5 minutes, he had to come down and check his car and see that it's locked. Now, he did that about 10 times a day, almost lost his job, but he was a specialist in what he was doing.
Yeah.
So his employer said, well, get some treatment, seek some help. And he did, and he eventually got better, and he went back to doing this. And then I have another patient who, for years from childhood, was a little concerned about, cleanliness, punctuality, and grew up building that into her own, character. And so if a place was clean, she'd still find a speck of dust and clean it again. She wouldn't want to go to public toilets at all. It was a nightmare going on trips. It was very difficult getting to restaurants because she was really concerned about dirt and whether the place was clean. But she didn't feel there was anything wrong with what she was experiencing. That's her personality. That's obsessive compulsive personality disorder.
Okay, that's a difference.
Which is very different from a disease, yeah.
Okay, and how do you make that differentiation?
It is a bit controversial, but the basic medical accepted definition is that an obsessive compulsive personality is somebody who's actually comfortable with what they do and they believe it's right. Whereas somebody with OCD, the disorder itself, has knows that it's dysfunctional and it's uncomfortable.
How bad can it get, Stephen? Because I had a friend, a schoolmate, who actually committed suicide because of OCD. And, you know, she showed signs in school, but you know, at that time, nobody really knew much about OCD. And we just thought that she was had this, you know, obsession with being clean, you know, and didn't think much of it. But, you know, later in her 30s, she actually passed on. She committed suicide. Oh,
sorry to hear that. It's terrible. Untreated OCD can lead to depression, subsequent depression, and probably that's what happened to your friend. Now, talking about that spectrum, it's a fine line between a really super perfectionistic person and a dysfunctionally perfectionistic person. Someone who does their job very well, like perhaps Philip, your crane driver, he might have been the best in the world.
Yeah.
But the OCD also translated to other things in life. So it's very hard to differentiate that flexibility.
So if left untreated, it can lead to other problems?
It can lead to depression. It can lead to severe family discord. It can lead to breakdowns in families, in marriages, in relationships, unemployment. It can be a very debilitating disorder. And it's not just about washing hands. It can be about a lot of different themes.
We hear of a lot of children who have some sort of obsessive, you know, characteristics. Mm. The way they sleep, the pillow has to be a certain way, the bolster needs to be here, you know. But how long do we wait before we realize that it could possibly be a problem?
Well, if it's starting to affect their daily life, if they're not, you know, mixing around with others as much, they're not able to perform, they're deteriorating in the academic performance, then it's an indication that there needs to be some intervention. The other thing about OCD, which many people don't realize, is that it's one of the fifth most disabling illness in the world. You know, the Harvard Medical School and WHO actually classified all the different disorders and looked at the disability associated with these disorders, including disorders that cause death, like tuberculosis or, you know, cancer. And they found that among the top 10 were five psychiatric conditions, of which OCD was one of the, you know, was the fifth most disabling illness.
And its impact on quality of life has been judged more severe than diabetes.
Yes.
Really?
Absolutely.
How so?
Well, it affects the person in total. I've had patients who stopped work because of the OCD, who, you know, had to get their whole family involved in the OCD. If their family wasn't involved in checking together with them, then, you know, they'll kick up a fury. They'll be in complete anxiety. And so it not affected just them, but it affected their family, their relationships. It sort of got them, you know, completely disabled. And that's worse than diabetes, because, I mean, you can manage diabetes, you can, you know, control your diet. You're not going to have relationship issues or, you know, lose a job because of diabetes. But with OCD, that can happen.
Our phone lines are open. If you want to ask the doctors a question, it's 0377 109000. But Stephen, despite of all of this and awareness that it's, you know, 5 out of the 10 top diseases in the world are psychologically based or psychiatric conditions, but people with OCD typically wait a decade or more before they actually seek help. How do we change that? Because, as I said initially, we think, you know, it's nothing. You know, it's really nothing. It's presented in school, but we didn't quite take it seriously. You know, so
it's because one grows into the illness. It becomes part of their life, from mild cleanliness, a little bit more, and finally it becomes their life. And like Philip mentioned very accurately, it involves the family. So if you've got family members helping you out of fear or out of love, out of just wanting an easy way out, it's just going to perpetuate or make the condition go on and on and on. Yeah. You'd actually have to even move the person away from the family, away from the same four walls of their daily life, uproot the OCD, and change the family behavior. So that's I think the biggest stumbling block why OCD takes so long a time.
So when you treat the patient, you're treating the family as well?
Absolutely. We do that very often in our own practice, that we not only see the patient, but we also see the family, get their perspective for the whole illness, and then family therapy becomes an important aspect of therapy as well, or of treatment.
You know, Philip, I truly believe that OCD is a family disorder.
And what do you mean by that?
I could relate
to that as being genetic. As in family, everybody in the family sort of has some element of it.
Yes, that is one possibility. But the other thing is the behavioral consequence of one person with OCD and how the mother will be loving enough to do what the son says and the dad will say, okay, I will allow this. At least it's not checking the doors 100 times. It's only 50 times, so it's not that bad.
Right. Yeah.
But for somebody else, it'll be 50 is way too much anyway.
Yeah, but that is an indication already that, you know, this condition could become worse.
Yes, yes. I mean, we have this term that we often use among families known as enablers. And families think that they're actually helping, you know, their family member by, you know, doing some of the things that they require to help reduce the anxiety. But in actual fact, they're enabling the illness. They're helping the illness to get worse and more protected and chronic as well.
Okay. And, you know, OCD can also be associated with an external event. Could you give me an example?
You know, there's a symbolism which is thought to be part of the psychological factors related to why people develop OCD. The common OCD is contamination, the fear of contamination. Now, contamination can be symbolic. So if a child at a young age has been maybe sexually molested or, you know, something happened to them at that age, then the OCD could be related to trying to clean what they believe is contamination. And that can be sourced from anything. From people who are symbolize, you know, the person who was a perpetrator or other things. So there is a psychological factor that's involved in how people perceive this and how it's related in the mind. And then those, you know, actions and thoughts may try to overcome that psychologically, but they're actually just continuously going on.
I'm amazed. I mean, you have fMRIs now to, you know, figure out what's happening in the brain as we think. And, you know, I'm surprised that we haven't made much headway with fMRIs and OCD, for an example.
Well, and actually on OCD many years ago, I remember when I was just doing my master's, we were quite excited because it was the one anxiety disorder where there were quite a lot of changes in the brain. And it was becoming more like a physical illness rather than anything else. And suggesting that medication would play a huge role.
When you say physical, what do you mean?
That there are neurochemical changes and neuroanatomical changes. There were changes even in the amount of oxygen being utilized in some parts of the brain. So all that suggesting that there's, you know, a physical sort of issue in the brain that's causing this as well.
So we've not made much headway in terms of understanding better through that?
It's still a growing illness. The sense that the DSM-5, the latest American-based diagnostic criteria, have come up with new symptoms, making OCD a much broader kind of disorder. And in fact, now they are even suggesting that it's not even an anxiety disorder anymore. It's something in it all by itself. And I do believe that the definition is still going to change even more in future.
So we're still learning more and more about it.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? The fact that it's a condition by itself and no longer just an anxiety disorder.
The good thing is there are treatments that actually work and people can recover. And when we focus on the biopsychosocial model, we can actually cover most of the etiology and the factors that may have caused the illness in the beginning. The bad thing is we're not completely certain what we're doing, which area we're hitting and what... You know, what is exactly getting better, but we know that these treatments work and people do, you know, improve with time.
Great stuff. Good to know that there is, you know, then of course you have the whole side effect thing and how does that all, you know, come to play as far as medication is concerned. We're discussing obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD, with Dr. Philip George and Dr. Stephen Jambunathan, both consultant psychiatrists. If you have a question, give us a call. The number is 03-7710-9000. Tweet VFM Radio or text 016-201-9000. Good afternoon. It's The Bigger Picture and I'm Mira Sivasuthi. We're on our psychiatry series. We're discussing obsessive compulsive disorder with Dr. Philip George and Dr. Stephen Jambunathan, both consultant psychiatrists. We're going to go straight to a phone call. Dave, how are you today, Dave?
Oh, hello, hello, hi, good evening.
Good evening. You have a question?
Yeah, I have a question about OCD. Let's say a person is an introvert and antisocial. You know, we are all born in different ways.
Yes.
And we have our ways in life. And if a person is introvert and also a germaphobe, you know, they're obsessive about cleanliness and all, does it say that a person has an anxiety and OCD disorder?
Any more questions for Dave, or would you like to answer this on air?
Yeah, I'd like to know if this person has been living with this from a long time, or there was a exact period when it started. There was, you know, a cause or a period when the onset.
I'm actually it's a person, you know, I'm an introvert. I don't like to mix around with people as much. I only like to speak to people who I know or whom have been my friend for a long time. And I also have this this desire to make everything clean and have this cleanliness. And I do not know if it is a sign of OCD or not.
Have you had this for a long time, Dave?
It was with me for quite some time, yeah, I can say that.
But does it distress you?
No, yeah. not distressing me in any way at all.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
Are you able to function, Dave?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine. Oh.
Why does it trouble you then?
I don't know, you know, at some point in life, I noticed that I was even clean and I needed this desire and making everything perfect and clean, and it wasn't as same as others, and that troubled me a little.
Mm. Okay.
Does it trouble others? Do you trouble others with your...
No, not really. But they kept asking me, why am I like that? And I just said, it's just who I am.
Just,
you know?
Who you are.
It's just how I have been, and yeah. I will always be. So I was just wondering, is that a problem?
Okay. Thank you very much, Dave. We'll answer this on air. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
I think Dave answered his question in the last statement.
Yes.
And so basically there is OCPD, which is an obsessive compulsive personality disorder. In the ICD-10, it's called anancastic personality disorder, which differentiates it from OCD. But there are different types of OCPD as well. There's the disorder and then there's traits. And people with OCPD traits actually do very well because they're concerned about detail. And these are the type of people that you want to have on your team. Mm-hmm. You know, they're really good to make a business grow or to, you know, build a enterprise and all this sort of stuff. So Dave may be having OCPD traits or disorder. If usually in a disorder, other people will notice and get distressed by it. With OCD, it is distressing. The anxiety is killing and it's disabling. So there's a big difference in these two.
But they're just traits at the moment. Does Dave need to be... does Dave need to watch these traits to ensure it does not become a disorder?
Yeah, sure. Definitely. That's true. But the thing is, if Dave is fine with it and his friends don't complain and no one is disordered by it, I think Dave, you're just a very clean person.
Yeah, attention for detail.
Yeah. If there's dysfunction setting in, then you'd better seek help from a psychologist.
To get some help.
Yeah.
Okay. All right then. LTY, your question?
Hello.
Hi, your question.
Hello.
Hi, LTY.
Hello.
Good afternoon, Dr. Philip and Dr. Steven. How are you both?
Good. Thanks, Delta.
Okay. I have one question. My question may be related to OCD, but you kindly comment, okay? Mm-hmm. If a child keep on making the same mistake over and over again, that is the child is not learning, all right? How do we overcome it? Does it go away as the child grow older? My take is that a child lack discipline, responsibility in maturity. What do you think, Dr. Kindly advice? Thank you very much.
Thank you, LTY.
Thank you.
He's very hard on the child, isn't he? LTY.
You know, children often look for attention. And when they do something wrong and they get the attention, then they'll repeat it. When they do something right and they don't get attention, then they won't repeat that behavior. So I don't know if LTY is actually talking about a child who's deprived of a little bit of attention and so repeats the same mistake. Because children can be quite manipulative and they know what parents want. They know parents don't like certain things. But if parents don't give them the attention when they do the right things, the praise or, you know, all that sort of stuff, then they might as well do the bad things because they're seeking attention. I mean, that's what children's... I mean, whole, you know, purposes. Can I, as how much attention can I get? And if I'm not getting it when I do good things, I might as well do bad things and keep repeating it.
You know how we all go to Google for
advice
and diagnosis. many people do this self-diagnosis of OCD. Would you recommend that, Stephen? Before seeking professional help?
There's no harm in getting more information about yourself, but don't try and treat yourself. That's when you should seek help, because there are lots of funny recommendations, different kinds of traditional medicines and other strange things that are recommended. But now, if you want to know more about yourself, online things do help. But when it comes to receiving treatment, go and see a doctor. Talking about this young boy who's got repetitive behavior, we shouldn't go around worrying about medical conditions too much, especially in the young, because a lot of their behavioral patterns are transient. They grow out of it. Mm. And situational, like Philip said, reactionary.
Yeah.
And it can be the same with obsession and compulsion as well, isn't it? They could just grow out of it. It could be just a phase that they're going through. Would you like to define obsession and compulsion, Stephen?
Well, the medical definition of an obsession, strangely, is not just a thought, but it can be a repeated impulse to do something, or even images. So some people with a certain kind of OCD actually talk about seeing things in front of them. Flashes of things that they don't like, or something that's worrisome. Perhaps if they worry too much about parents, they keep seeing a car accident or a red light. And that can be just OCD in terms of recurrent intrusive images. Mm-hmm. So we mustn't just worry about just germs or
washing your hands so many times.
Or locking your car. But it also can be just sitting down and thinking. The ruminations, just sitting and thinking, I've got to settle this mat in my brain before I can do anything. And it could take hours and hours and hours.
Okay. All right. Are most people, I've always wondered this, whether people with OCD are aware that their obsession and compulsions are actually irrational? Or does it make sense to them then that they accept that this is, you know, how it's done, and so they just continue doing it?
Yeah, usually in the beginning of the illness, they would be more aware of the irrationality of their thoughts or their behaviors. But as the illness sets in, they get sucked into it. And then it becomes, well, it is something that I have to do. I mean, I can give you an example of a patient who had religious scruples. And she had this feeling that, you know, she and her whole family were going to be converted if she allowed something related to another religion, even from the TV, to come in. And it could be even a person who doesn't profess her faith. And the moment that happened, her whole family would have to stop everything they're doing and clean the whole house.
Wow.
Spend about 2 hours to just clean. They could have no visitors. She couldn't go out of the house in fear of meeting anyone. So that's how disabling it was. You know, and it took years because the family were actually enablers. They helped.
And it's amazing that the family are enablers.
Yeah.
There's definitely something not right.
Yeah, you'll be amazed if you were to go into the house of somebody with OCD. Mm. The picture you get from the family is different from what you see. I've been into a patient's house with permission, and it was just something else. Despite needing cleanliness and order, the house was totally upside down.
What do you mean?
Because another example is of somebody who wanted to be clean. It was such a chore to keep clean or to stay clean, hours and hours in the bathroom. He just gave up. And he was eventually smelling of feces and rotten food and poor self-hygiene.
Okay.
Yeah. OCD for cleanliness, but he gave up. Mm. And now that's really extreme OCD.
Mm. Right. So it can hit those levels where you just flip the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, and then it becomes a bigger problem, isn't it?
Yeah. And so it's very commonly at that stage associated with other complications like major depression and suicidal thoughts and suicidal attempts as well.
So they feel powerless to stop then. They don't know how to handle this anymore.
Absolutely.
I think that sense of hopelessness seeps in. And,
yes.
Yeah.
And does this presence of insight sort of distinguish OCD from psychotic illnesses such as schizophrenia? You said you see things. With schizophrenia, you sometimes, you hear things, right? Yeah. How do you make that differentiation?
You can see things also in schizophrenia. Now, this is a very difficult area, the area between OCD and psychosis. And no one is still sure about it because some severe OCD cases can, people with OCD, sorry, the severe cases can actually present like a person with schizophrenia. They want so much of organization, they can be disorganized. They think in such a way, it can be almost disorganized thinking. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's very hard to differentiate severe OCD from the recurrent disturbed behavior of somebody with schizophrenia.
In the mild to moderate OCD, one of the phrases that we often use is ego dystonic and ego syntonic. So the symptoms in OCD are often ego dystonic. They are not keeping with the ego. The person doesn't like the symptoms. He doesn't feel they're right. You know, why should I continuously feel that the door is locked when I've checked it 100 times today? And so they're fighting this thought or this impulse or this, you know, this compulsion. Whereas in a person with schizophrenia, it's ego syntonic. It's part of them. Somebody is, you know, observing me, or, you know, somebody is opening my door all the time, and I know it's real, and, you know, so that's some of the ways that we can differentiate mm-hmm. it when it's mild to moderate. But when it comes to severe, it's sometimes hard, it's a bit blur.
What do you do then?
Yeah, well, I think it's also getting a longitudinal history, understanding the onset of the whole illness, speaking to the family, doing a full assessment is really essential. With people with schizophrenia, there'll be other symptoms as well. There'll be a complete deterioration in their functioning. Not the fact that they're disabled by their illness, they just can't function as what they used to function before. Mm-hmm. Whereas in OCD, they might actually maintain what their abilities were from before. So, yeah, so we can differentiate it through different symptoms.
Do OCD sufferers have good days and bad days?
Yes, just like anybody else. sometimes when the anxiety levels are lesser, the OCD goes away. But if there's an upcoming project or some family problems or some relationship issues or something like that, it would come up worse. Mm. And it'll come and go.
So if you manage the underlying trigger, then chances of you getting an OCD, what would you call it, an attack?
Well, it's not always just episodic. I mean, it gets worse. It's most of the time always there. Mm-hmm. But it's controllable, but it gets worse in the face of stress. But you can't put a balloon around someone and say, okay, we're not going to expose you to any stress.
Yeah.
That's irrational. Mm-hmm. So it's better to treat the OCD and then enable the person to be able to, you know, deal with day-to-day issues.
Actually, taking away the balloon is part of the treatment, isn't it?
Yes.
That's right. Exposure and response prevention.
Yes, correct. Yeah. Reality is mm-hmm. such, isn't it? I think there's a lot of misconceptions, as I mentioned earlier, about OCD and how we use the word very loosely. But have we mm-hmm. trivialized it to a certain extent that, yeah. you know, people don't take this condition seriously?
I don't think we can emphasize enough how serious this condition is and how common it is. Local stats are what, Philip? You said 1.5?
Yeah, the National Health and Morbidity Survey suggested 1.5, but that's really very low. I don't know if they've actually...
Most textbooks talk about 4 to 6%, but I strongly believe it's somewhere closer to 10%, because a lot of people suffer in silence,
yes.
or suffer in ignorance, not knowing that it's a condition. And very often, patients who come... Well, I can say very often, patients who present with anxiety and depression, we fail to realize that the underlying cause is OCD. Primarily OCD.
Okay. So yeah. it can itself, it presents itself in many guises to a certain extent as well.
I think
well.
The reason why we fear that it's been trivialized is because a lot of people confuse it with the personality, like mm-hmm. Dave was talking yes. to us earlier. And so, you know, the personality is very common. There are many people who are a little bit more concerned about punctuality and cleanliness and, you know, orderliness and all of that. And that's good. In some levels. But when it gets a little bit extra, then a lot of people turn around and say, well, you're OCD. But that's not true. You're OCPD, not OCD.
Yeah, and even then, OCP traits, yeah. not even a disorder yeah. as yet.
That would be OCB, yeah. Obsessive Compulsive Behavior.
Yes. Yeah.
We all have a bit of that.
Yeah, I'm sure we do.
Yeah, I do.
To a certain extent. So we're discussing Obsessive Compulsive Disorder with Dr. Stephen Jambunathan and Dr. Philip George. If you have a question, our phone lines are open, 03-7710-9000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 016-201-9000. We'll be back just after this market update on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. We're discussing Obsessive Compulsive Disorder with Dr. Philip George and Dr. Stephen Jambunathan. OCD is what we refer to it most of the time. And if you have a question for them, give us a call. Our phone lines are open, 03-7710-9000. Do most of us understand the pain that OCD causes?
Sorry?
Do most of us understand the pain that OCD causes, and that's something we need to understand?
Yeah, no, I don't think we can even imagine how much of suffering they go through, because it's something they're battling with themselves. So you're your own enemy, and that's very painful, because your right hand is saying do something and your left hand is doing the opposite. So it is very painful, and hence it can very often lead to depression.
Yeah.
You know, we often use this terminology in psychiatry. We differentiate our illnesses. There are about 200 different illnesses. Differentiate them into the major mental illnesses and the minor mental illnesses. And OCD comes under anxiety disorders, which is considered as a minor mental disorder. But in actual fact, the disability is huge. A lot of patients actually come to me telling me that, I think I'm going mad. I'm just going crazy. I can't even control a single thing in my life. And they feel just as disabled as somebody with schizophrenia or with bipolar disorder. And so, that demarcation, I think, is really unfair. And people with this illness actually suffer just as much as those with serious illnesses.
So what are the treatment options, Stephen?
Our favorite term, biopsychosocial. Mm-hmm. The mild OCD can be treated with behavioral therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy. Identifying ways of thinking that are a bit not too accurate, something that a lot of OCD sufferers have, magical thinking, can be changed. And also for those who have like fear of germs or cleanliness or anything in that line, gradual exposure. Touch something dirty and realize without washing, after an hour, you're not going to die. And after a day, you're still healthy. So lose that habit of wanting to do things over and over again, because nothing bad is going to happen if you stop. When OCD is a bit more severe, then medication is a must, because it's so challenging without medicines that the chances are they won't improve. And even with medicines, it takes a long time sometimes.
Yeah. I think the essential thing is going back to the basics, that it's an anxiety disorder. So with anxiety disorders, managing anxiety is one component, and that would be relaxation techniques.
Mm-hmm.
So, finding different ways to control anxiety, breathing exercises, so even yoga or, other things that actually help with anxiety. And then response prevention, meaning that, when the impulse comes, to stop and, prevent it from proceeding. And of course, that will increase the anxiety that the person has. So then they need to use those techniques that they've learned, the relaxation techniques, to control the anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And Stephen, you said that it does take a long time sometimes with medication. Why is that?
Because you've got to unlearn old habits and you've got to learn new habits.
What is the medication doing?
The medications used generally are similar to antidepressants. They are the antidepressants. Mm-hmm. The chemical basis behind OCD is a shortage of serotonin in certain parts of the brain. And so when you take the medications, it helps the body, it helps make more available serotonin in the brain. And that allays the OCD symptoms, a bit of the anxiety, and a bit of the depression also.
Okay, but then you said you still need to then break the cycle.
Mm. Yeah, because there's so much of habit that needs to be changed. Mm. And it also involves your environment, it involves your family, and involves just habit, and that's more difficult. It's easy to take the medicines, but then you still have the same cues, the same reminders, and the same connections that you need to dislodge or break.
And that's the hard work, isn't
yeah.
it? But studies have shown the most effective type of therapy for OCD is cognitive behavioral therapy, which includes exposure and response prevention. Could you explain what that is?
I think that was generally what Stephen and I
was talking
mentioned.
About.
Yeah.
Okay, so it encompasses so, all of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, sensitizing yourself to the thing that you're fearful of. It's called desensitization.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's exposure. And then after that would be response prevention, preventing the response that you normally do, washing your hands or going and checking the door, prevent that. And then, of course, the relaxation techniques after that. Sometimes, even in moderate to mild to moderate cases, people find this behavior therapy not so easy to do because the anxiety builds up. And so medication might also play a role, because now we have medications that have very little side effects. And so medications might actually play a role to help ease the anxiety and then engage in the behavioral therapies. People then find a response maybe a bit faster as well.
Do people fall by the wayside trying to recover? I can imagine it's such a challenge, especially the part where you need to challenge this cycle of doing things.
Yes. It can be waxing and waning. You will have numerous relapses, just like addictive illnesses.
Yeah.
It's a growing process. That's why it takes a lot of time and a lot of pain.
Generally, there are two phases for the treatment. There's the acute phase where we treat the illness until the symptoms are more or less controlled. But then after that, there's the real important phase of maintenance where the treatment continues so that we prevent another episode from happening. That's where most people fall off. You know, they feel well, they're good, they're going back to work,
yeah.
everything's normal, the family is all great. And they say, why should I take this medicine?
Mm.
Or why should I, you know, continue thinking about, you know, behavior therapy? And they fall off, and the subsequent episodes usually are worse and they're harder to treat.
I've read that idleness can be a breeding ground for increased obsessional thinking. Is it important for those with OCD to keep themselves busy?
Yes. Another therapeutic skill would be distraction. Sometimes you get them to just wear a little rubber band around their wrist. Mm. And when they start going towards that habit, just snap their wrist with the rubber band. Not for the pain, but just as a little reminder. Mm-hmm. That, listen, change your focus. Distract yourself. Keep busy.
Mm.
And that helps. So idleness, yes. It's the workshop for ruminations.
Of course.
And for doubts.
Yeah. And what about diet? Does that play a role as well?
Well, all anxiety disorders are very susceptible to, you know, things in your diet. If your diet is too high in carbohydrate and sugars or in caffeine, they can all spark off anxiety symptoms, and they can then bring on the OCD symptoms as well. It's important to have a balanced diet. Also, substances, alcohol and other substances may also precipitate relapses in OCD. So it's important to keep that at bay as well.
Stephen, can you ever be cured of OCD?
Yes. Believers, yes. But it's difficult and it takes time. I would say that people with OCD should not give up.
When are you considered cured?
Functionality and personal comfort.
Mm. Without medication?
Some would need medication long term, but yes, even without medication, eventually it is possible.
I don't think there's a need to ever say that you're not cured until you're off medication.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, people are actually symptomless and actually able to perform. But the moment they stop medication, the risk of relapse increases. And so it's just like hypertension. You don't say, you know, I've just been diagnosed with hypertension and I'm sick for the rest of my life. You're actually well controlled. You know, so recovery can be redefined. And I think recovery in OCD can be that you're actually, you know, symptom-free, you're functional, you're got a good quality of life, but you're on medication, and which is fine.
Okay. So as long as you can go back to leading a normal life, doesn't matter. What support should family and friends and co-workers offer to those who have OCD? I think co-workers is very important.
Well, I think people involved with the sufferer should be firm. Not too enabling, but firm about, listen, I know you have this problem, come, stop it, let's do something else, kind of thing.
Mm.
Understanding and being firm, I think, would be very important.
Philip?
Yeah, I think setting boundaries is really important, but also finding out more about the illness and where they can seek help would be the role of the family. Bring them to think about seeking help as well. There's a lot of stuff on the internet, as we mentioned, but some stuff are not so positive. I mean, there are about 2 million sites about suicide, and about 1 million of them are actually about how to commit suicide.
Yeah.
So we need to know where to look for information. Malaysian Psychiatric Association has a website. WebMD is a website that people can refer to. But there are some sites that actually provide information.
I want to take one last call from Pat. How are you, Pat?
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You have a question?
Yes. I would like to find out, they are talking about someone like always like locking the door and not sure that it's locked and check again and again.
Yes.
Is that to do with a behavior problem rather than a obsessive compulsive disorder?
Okay, I think this was covered earlier in the show, but just to refresh our memories, Pat, I'll get Dr. Philip to answer that. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Pat, I think, refers to the obsession and compulsion of doubts. So people who have the theme of doubts feel that they have not actually completed a task. And so they keep checking that over and over again. When it becomes something that they know is insensible and disabling, then yes, it fits into the category of OCD, especially when it starts to affect their day-to-day life.
Okay. Your message, Philip, on OCD?
Yeah, well, OCD is a disabling illness. And if we actually treat it early, people do have a good chance of complete recovery. So I think it's about being aware and then finding treatment early. Treatment doesn't necessarily have to be medication. It can actually start with psychological treatments and behavior therapy, but medications are safe as well.
Stephen?
I love the statement, practice makes imperfect. And that's what OCD is all about. You just have to work on it to be not perfect anymore.
Thank you very much. Thank you both very much for joining us. Dr.
Thank
Philip
you.
George and Dr. Stephen Jambunathan, consultant psychiatrists on obsessive compulsive disorder on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.